This is from David White. He says, I want to write about faith, about the way the moon rises over cold snow night after night. Faithful even as it fades from fullness, slowly becoming that last curving and impossible sliver of light before the final darkness. But I have no faith myself. I refuse it the smallest entry. Let this then, my small poem, like a new moon, slender and barely open, be the first prayer that opens me to faith. For the last 3 weeks, we have been working with the same theme, and that's the theme of the moment of choice, or it could be called the moment of freedom. I thought last week was the last week, but evidently it's not. Because I ran across some very practical help for us in working with this moment of choice. And that's what I want to share with you tonight. Just as a little bit of review for the people who haven't been here for the last few weeks, we talked about the fact that stimuli arise in the environment, or circumstances arise that we note as pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. And that so far, to that point, there is no problem. That's simply life the way it comes. Sometimes it's pleasant, sometimes it's unpleasant, and sometimes it's neutral. But there's no suffering yet. The moment of choice, which can be the moment of freedom, is that moment when we decide whether we're going to grasp or push away or zone out, or whether we're going to simply stay and be present with what is without asking for it to change. That's when the moment of choice becomes the moment of freedom. And that's what we've been looking at with Gangaji's help for the last couple of weeks. So what I found was a sheet that says, and I don't know who to give credit for this, but someone wise wrote it. How to practice peace when I am struggling. Has anybody ever struggled with the mind? Or what to do when I want to react habitually? We know what that feels like. Something happens and I want to react habitually. So this is some of the practical help, I hope, with regard to that. One way of looking at it is, it's the way to choose either suffering or freedom. Either a kind of incarceration or freedom and happiness. So, what to do? The first suggestion shouldn't be a surprise to anybody who does the Vipassana practice. It says, watch closely, but refrain from immediate action. Watch closely, but refrain from immediate action. And that's a huge beginning, because that knee-jerk, want to do it this way, is so strong. So first we watch closely, but we refrain from immediate action. Feel the quality of the urge to react. That comes with watching closely. You can actually feel the urge to react, and it probably has a bodily component. You can feel it in the body. We want to grasp, or we want to push away, or we want to get lost in the same old story. And some examples of that could be the urge to, as last week Gangaji talked about, the anger urge, which is one example of the way this can happen. The urge to lash out at someone. Does anybody else besides me know what that feels like? The urge to lash out. The urge to judge oneself or the other. We can feel that come up. The urge to establish self-righteous victimhood. Surely none of us does that. So these are just some of the top 10. I'm sure that you could give other examples. So watch it closely. Don't act on it. Don't feed this habitual response. Every time we feed it, it's like another link in the chain. Every time we feed it, it grows stronger. If it's an anger thing, every time we lash out in anger, we forge the chain more strongly. Stop talking to yourself or others about how right or wrong something is, because it builds it up too much. It makes it seem so much more important. Don't forget that the mind believes what you say to it. It really does. It doesn't know. And it believes what we tell it. And when we tell our story and how this is wrong and that's right and somebody did me wrong or whatever it is, whatever our story is, when we tell it, the mind believes it. And the mind, we get into a groove with that, don't we? And the mind says, oh yeah, I remember that. Let's play that one. Yeah. These are all the don'ts. We'll get to the do part in a minute. Don't wallow in self-pity, self-absorption, or self-righteousness. Why should we not wallow in self-pity, self-absorption, and self-righteousness? Well, this is the way Wu Wei Wu puts it. Why are you so unhappy? Because 99.9% of what you think and everything you do is for yourself, and there isn't one. That is liberation. It's easy to fall into this unawares. It is so, especially if there's that groove, that habitual groove. We're there before we know it. We're already out there with the same story before we realize it. That's the beauty of the practice of mindfulness. It takes energy to maintain and give this I something to talk about. You know, the whole story perpetuates the story of me, okay, that I carry around and tell to people and tell to myself about who I am and what the problem is and what they've done and how things could be better and what happened to me. You know, I do that. The story of me. We have to maintain it Instead, here we go with the happy part. Instead, label it thinking. Very simple, but not easy, comes as one of the first instructions in the meditation practice. Watch it closely. Don't buy in. Label it as thinking. Touch it and let it go. That's all it is. It's just thinking. It's just a story that's grooved. Relax and try not to make such a big deal of it. We want to make a big deal of it because that adds to the drama. Okay? Smile or laugh if possible. If possible. This is not a matter of right or wrong. This is not a judgment. This is simply practical help that leads to freedom. Look at the quality of the emotion without indulging on the one hand or rejecting on the other. Just look at the quality of the emotion with curiosity. Oh, look at that. We don't have to indulge it, and we don't have to reject it. We're simply looking at it. Either indulging or rejecting strengthens it, the emotion, the story that we tell ourselves. When we indulge it, it strengthens it, like the chain. When we reject it, try to push it away, doesn't work. It won't take rejection. That also makes it strong. It'll say, oh yeah, and come back. So without indulging, without rejecting, simply notice what it's like. Recognize the storyline for what it is. It's just a story. It's just a movie. Disidentify. This story is not you. Disidentify and investigate. There's the curiosity piece again. But it's a curiosity without judgment. It's a curiosity that says, let's look more closely and see what this is about. This is a wonderful suggestion. Journal about the situation in the third person. Okay? Journal about it in the third person. Remind yourself that it is your confused perception that is causing the problem. This is what the Buddhists call wrong view. We just need an adjustment of our lens. We're seeing it incorrectly. It's a perceptual distortion. If it causes suffering, it's a perceptual distortion. Not the other person. That's not the if there's another person involved. He or she has Buddha nature and is a recipient of karma. He or she is helping you purify your karma. Consider the possibility of gratitude. Consciously and intentionally express an interest in someone else's life. Ask a question or two without self-referencing, without talking about me. This is if you happen to be, if there's another person involved, if you're with another person. Ask a question about the other person's life without self-referencing, without thinking, oh, well, that, you know, that's true of me too. Do Tonglen for yourself and for the other person, for both of you. We're all in the same boat. It's not us and them. It really isn't. We're all in the same boat of suffering or of freedom. Compassion for our mutual predicament. If it's an interrelational thing, and it so frequently is, compassion for the predicament that we're both caught in. Communicate with the other person if you can do this without blame or victimhood. That's a tall order, isn't it? Yeah. Look attentively, and again I would say with curiosity, with this investigative spirit, look attentively at how it works to feel feels to be unblameable, beyond reproach, pure. You will begin to get a sense of yourself as being unblameable and pure. Notice that and bring that sense of curiosity to that feeling too. Remind yourself that sometimes reality is painful, big surprise, boring, or ugly, but it is always workable. It doesn't mean something is wrong, and it doesn't mean something needs fixing. Okay? It can be just like this, and it's workable. That's the nature of the practice. Appreciate the mystery. Appreciate the mystery. Two more readings. This one is from writer Maria Rilke. Perhaps everything that frightens us is in its deepest essence something helpless that wants our love. Perhaps all the dragons in our lives are princesses who are waiting to see us act just once with beauty and courage. This is by Dana Falls. It's called Awakening Now. Why wait for your awakening? The moment your eyes are open, seize the day. Would you hold back when the beloved beckons? Would you deliver your litany of sins like a child's collection of seashells, prized and labeled? No, I can't step across the threshold, you say, eyes downcast. I'm not worthy, I'm afraid, and my motives aren't pure. I'm not perfect, and surely I haven't practiced nearly enough. My meditation isn't deep, and my prayers are sometimes insincere. I still chew my fingernails, and the refrigerator isn't clean. Do you value your reasons for staying small more than the light shining through the open door? Forgive yourself. Now is the only time you have to be whole. Now is the sole moment that exists to live in the light of your true self. Perfection is not a prerequisite for anything but pain. Please, oh please, don't continue to believe in your disbelief. This is the day of your awakening.